You're listening to a sermon from Heights Church, located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. For more information on our church, please visit heightschurchmn.org.
We're going to be in Genesis chapter 1. And again, we're going through Multiply, our discipleship journey. We're meeting in groups, and some folks are meeting one-on-one as we walk through just what it means to be a disciple in Christ. And then I also just want to point out, on our website, heightschurchmn.org, there is a resource page, and every week I update it with some resources for this week so you can get to the reading for the week. And then there's a hard copy back there for the reading for this week. Scriptures to read, some reflections. So as we've gone through it, we've gone through what it means to be a disciple, what it means to be the church, how to study the Word. And I tell you, if you weren't here last week, you need to hear, and it's on our website, you need to hear Pastor Brenna and her walking through Romans 8 logically, how to study the Word logically. That was fantastic. And now we're going to get into walking through the Old Testament. So today we're talking about creation. So we begin at the beginning, and we need to be reminded that the Bible isn't cobbled together in a bunch of stories that don't fit together. We need to understand that as we begin our journey, especially in the Old Testament, it is a continuous story. It's a story that gives meaning. It's a story that gives meaning to our existence. It's a story that gives meaning to our daily lives. And it's a realization, especially when you look at the creation story, that humanity itself has purpose. And so as we journey through, we need to pay attention to the story, okay? And the key to remember here is that as we walk through the Old Testament story, Genesis, and then we get into the story of the Exodus, and then we get into the story of the giving of the law. But then when we get to Joshua, and we have a story that goes all the way through to 2 Kings, it's one continuous story. And when you have that in your mind as we go through it, when you get that set in your mind, we can get that story fixed in our mind, we can see the unfolding of kingdom truth throughout the rest of the Bible. When you know the story, then you can fit in. So you read one of the Old Testament prophets and you find out what time period they're in. That gets a setting in your mind, and that helps, you know. And so, but right now we're beginning here in the creation story. And so just real briefly, you read in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty, darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And we're going to walk through this just briefly here this morning. So Genesis 1 and 2 set the stage for everything that follows. But here's the thing, it's one of the most difficult places, because right off the bat, we have a minefield. We have, all of a sudden, we have this minefield right in front of us that has this whole thing of, is it science or is it faith? Or how old is the earth? And blah, 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 off we go, you know? And we end up in this battlefield, and we get ready for our litmus tests, and we start yelling at each other. You know, and you start to say, are you a 7-day creationist or a Darwinist left-wing commie evolutionist? Or you get shouted back, are you a true scientist believing the millions of years of history of the age of the earth? Or are you some fundamentalist wacko, check your brains at the door Christian who shoots abortion doctors? You know, we just set these minefields up. And you go, creation story. Oh, it's got to be this or it's got to be that. You know, and I've got to weave my way through all of this as we talk about this. You know, we line up, we see this text, and we want to see the text the way we want to see the text. We read the creation story, and often we want the Bible to answer our questions in our context. And that's what I want to walk us through, you know. And again, just reflecting back on Pastor Brenna and her message, just to be reminded that when you study the word logically, it's to study the word in its context. You know, and we believe in the authority of the written word. And we have to go through that human author to understand the authoritative word. Context is needed. You know, so the text, we need to be reminded the text of the word, the written word. The text is for us, but the text is not necessarily to us. And that's what we want to remember. We need to get into that audience to see and hear and what's in that context. And that's not easy. And as we walk through the creation story, we're going to have far more questions than understanding, quite possibly. But we need to see what God is saying in this story and try to get the bigger picture. So the question is what do we see? So we're going to put that picture up there. What is that? It's not a quick trick question, okay? It's the earth, okay? How do we know that's the earth?
Science.
How do we know that's the earth?
That's what it looked like.
Someone took a picture of it, yeah. You know? And I mean, but where's this view from?
Outer space.
It's from outer space, right? We got the technology together, we got to put it all together, got something up there, okay? And we were able to take a picture, okay? Now, that's fairly recent, right? The ability to get something out there and to look back and snap a picture, you know, and then get it developed at a photo mat, you know, on the way back to Earth or however they do that. That's the view that we have, okay? Now let's look at the next picture. What's that a picture of? It's ancient art, okay? It's an ancient depiction, okay? It's an ancient depiction. It's how the Egyptians saw the earth, okay? Because you don't have a satellite that goes up and snaps a picture. But you know all of these things exist. The question is how do they exist, okay? And so in an ancient worldview, the worldview typically is, you know, there are gods involved. And we know that there are things that are around them, that things that hold together. And we know that water is involved and this light is involved and air is involved somehow. And we know it's blue up there during the day and it's really dark at night. And you throw some little dots up there and you got this white round ball, you know. And all of it has to be put together in some way. And so for ancient cultures, it's depicted in different ways. That's how they saw the earth, okay. Because there's no other way to look at it, okay? There's no other way to say, oh, well, let's just send a satellite up and take a picture, you know, and figure it out. It's the context that they're in. Now, let's look at the next picture. This is an artist's depiction of a Hebrew worldview of the earth, okay? And it's actually a newer depiction of an artist, but it's based off of the descriptions that we see in Old Testament scripture. Okay, and so you get this understanding of the firmament and how everything holds together, and you get Leviathan underneath, you know, because Leviathan dwells in the deep, and all, you know, you get that picture of this is how the world is. Okay. Because you don't have a literal picture, okay? And those are the things that we deal with, you know? And it's, you know, how else would they have known, okay? Now we get the creation story, okay? And it's important to remember, you know, God doesn't set up a vocabulary that says, here's a 21st century vocabulary and a 21st century understanding humanity will eventually get to, and now I'm going to try and impose that onto these, you know, 10th century BC Hebrews, okay? It's not going to work. So what does God do? God gets into their vocabulary. Okay? He gets into their understanding and then communicates what is going on, because he wants them to see who he is, and then as importantly, he wants them to see who they are. Okay? And then add to that thought this additional thing from scholars that really they work on. When was a text, you have the oral transmission of the story, and then the question is when, then another question that scholars have is, when did that story become text? When did that story become the written form that gets read in a synagogue or in the temple or in a feast? Okay, when does that happen? And there's no doubt this is the story that comes through, but there are some scholars that would say that while being told for centuries in as a story orally, it may have been added to the text in the 6th century Babylonian captivity. Okay, now understand this. That really gives it context. Okay, that really helps us understand the importance of this story, because if this story comes to the written form and becomes part of who Israel, who the Hebrews are when they're in captivity, this is a huge story, because they're sitting in Babylon, and the typical worldview of the day is if another power has overtaken you, that makes their God more powerful than your God. And here in 6th century Babylon, sitting in captivity, comes the reminder of this story. No, Yahweh is more powerful, and you, as the people of God, are more powerful. You know, and so now they've got a story that empowers them to let them be reminded of who they are. And that it's not what the Babylonians are saying the reality is. It's who Yahweh is and that reality. And so you have that creation story. The creation story being told in a time period when all they see is Babylon, and they're being told that Babylon's gods are greater. This story has impact. Who is this God? And who are they? And it's the understanding, the reminder that God has bigger plans for them. So we need to see the text their way. And our questions, our own questions, need to be set aside sometimes. And that's a humbling thing. It is humbling to come to this text and set aside our questions. But that's what we need for this particular text. The question is what is God's action in the story? What's God communicating? And God isn't revealing science. God is revealing himself. So let's do a quick rundown of the story, and I want to show you what I think is a powerful message for us. The first thing is that whole thing of create, okay? That when God spoke, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The Hebrew word for that is bara, B-A-R-A. And this particular Hebrew word in this context means that God is always the subject. When that Hebrew word bara is used in the Old Testament, God is always the subject. So when God creates, there's an establishment of order, and he is establishing order and activity. For instance, on day one, he creates order. He puts light in a place and darkness in a place. Those things are there, but he says, this is how it's going to go. So he puts them into an order. He creates function, and he calls things good. And by that, it just simply means now it's working the way it's supposed to work. And he begins to create. And the other thing to note is this: God doesn't resolve all disorder. Darkness is still there. And darkness is not a good thing in humanity. Okay? We all try to figure out how to get light into darkness a lot, Darkness is still there. Humanity is created to help deal with darkness. Humanity is created to help deal with disorder. Okay, to function in a way that keeps the creative order moving, and so But let's simplify it even more. It's the difference, this story, in how we've looked at it typically, and how I think the way the text is written, how it could be looked at, it's the difference between describing the building of a house and the building of a home. Okay? The building of a house has structural things. It's creating something out of material, but you create a home out of creating order and creating function. You can have a house, but you got to have certain other elements to make it a home. And creation story in Genesis 1 and 2 is not so much a house story as it is a home story. What does God do with all the elements? We've treated the creation story like a house story, but it's not. It's a home story. In the house story, humanity is actually marginalized. Because when you get this science versus faith thing going on, humanity is set aside so we can argue about the age of a rock. You know, and we just you know, we're talking about age and the age of the earth and all this, and humanity's set aside in that debate. You know, so what is actually happening is there's a home story. There's a house, and God is making it his home and our home. And that puts humanity back in the picture. Why are we here? So you have this basic structure. Days 1, 2, and 3 are then mirrored by days 4, 5, and 6. Days 1, 2, and 3 show the outer structure of function. Days 4, 5, and 6 show the inner workings of each of those days. So day 4 gives an inner working of the function of day 1, okay? And then day 5 to day 2, day 6 to day 3, okay? And then out of all of that, quite honestly, here's what we get, okay? In those basic functions, here's what we get. We get the basics of human sustenance, okay? Time, weather, and food. Time, weather, and food. Now, let me ask you this. Generally, if you're going to have a conversation that just starts out, maybe you're just introducing yourself, what are some things that you're going to talk about? The weather, yeah, that's one thing, yeah. We're going to talk about the weather, you know. And, you know, and we talk about, and, you know, we talk about this time of year. We get into Thanksgiving, and then we get into Christmas, and we're all going, oh, man, where has time gone? Man, it's already the end of the year, you know. And we start thinking about that, and we talk about the weather. You know, we're going to get a, you know, we were talking about that this morning. How much snow are we going to get tomorrow? Oh, I heard 7 to 8. I heard 2 to 3. I heard, you know, it is all this stuff. You know, we talk about that stuff. And then food. After Thanksgiving. Oh, my goodness, you know. And, you know, it, those are all the, you know, the basics, okay. But the basics mean something to us because this is home, okay? You talk about those things because they have an impact on your life. They have an impact on your being. They have an impact on who we are as people. You know, but the other thing to remember is this. We sell the creation story short because we make it a 6-day creation instead of a 7-day creation. Somehow we created that seventh day and think it's nap time for God. You know, seventh day came and God took a nap. No, he didn't. You know, it's to understand it's about rest. Coming to his rest is not about taking a nap. It's about coming into his home and taking control. Everything has been prepared. Now he comes in. 2 Chronicles 6:41, the dedication that Solomon has at the temple. He says, come, O Lord, arise and take your rest. Inhabit this temple. You know what Solomon understands? All the years that he spent building that temple, and then the previous 6 days of dedication, because that's how long a dedication ceremony goes, is 6 days for a temple when you create something, you build something, you dedicate it to a god. He goes through a 6-day dedication process. If God doesn't show up on the seventh, everything's a waste. Everything is nothing. It's just a structure. That's it. If God doesn't show up and take command, then it's nothing. And that's what we need to basically understand about this text. When the ancient audience, what do they hear? When the ancient audience hears this story and they read it, they go, temple story. Because we know when we build something, we build it to a god, whether it's in the Babylonian culture, the Egyptian culture, or the Israelite culture, okay, you have a six-day ceremony, and on the seventh day is the story of God, or the God, who inhabits and takes control of that temple. It's a temple story. You know, and the seventh day is vital. If Solomon had built the temple, and in 6 days of sacrifices, and God doesn't come and inhabit the temple, it's a waste. Think of it this way. We talk about our particular context is in the United States, the White House, okay? The White House. Now, the White House is where the president has his residence, okay? It's where the president, you know, sleeps, but we don't talk about the Lincoln bedroom when we talk about the White House, okay? We talk about the Oval Office. Because when the president is in the White House, it's about the control room, which is symbolically shown to be the Oval Office, okay? So when the president is in the White House, it's about the president being in the control room, the Oval Office, okay? Yeah, we can talk about him sleeping, but that's not what we talk about. The president's in the White House. The White House is the symbol of the seat of control for the United States, okay? And that's the same thing. In Solomon's time, the temple is seen as the command center of the cosmos. And in creation, it's the world. God has ceased his ordering tasks and is now ready to take command. A couple of passages here. One is Psalm 32 and a couple of verses out of that. Psalm 32, verses 7 and 8 say this. Let us go to his dwelling place. Let us worship at his footstool, saying, arise, Lord, and come to your resting place, you and the ark of your might. For the Lord, now verses 13 and 14, for the Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his dwelling, saying, this is my resting place forever and ever. Here I will sit enthroned, for I have desired it. When God comes to his rest, and that's why you got to talk about 7 days of creation. When God comes to his rest, unrest and chaos are put to this, are put at bay. They're held back. It means order has stepped in. It means God is in control. And it means we are called to partner in this process of maintaining our that order. This story, the creation story, is huge. And we need to keep it huge. We need to move it away from petty discussions of how, you know, how old a rock is and see what God is telling his people. So here is the big so what. Here's the big so what. Am I walking in the knowledge that God is calling things to order? And am I following in his command to partner with him? That's a huge so what. Am I walking in the knowledge that God is calling all things, calling things to order? And am I following in his command to partner with him? This is a marvelous story. We need to see the big picture and become such deep students of the Word that we see what God is doing today in light of how he started this story. Let's pray.